Good afternoon. Welcome to What Comes Next Live. I'm your host, Tom McCallum. I'm passionate about open leadership and write about leadership daily at tommccallum.com. I'm always inspired by listening to the thoughts of leaders I meet, which led to this show. Our guests will first share a little about themselves and their thoughts on what comes next. Then we'll look to draw out a few ideas and insights for you to take away. Anyway, I'm joined today by a guest who is a first for me, which is somebody I've not met. Jerry Frentzos, world record holder many times over in master swimming, and a mutual friend introduced us, Jeff Raker, who is one of the USA's top swimming officials and who I've known through our geeky side gig as FINA international swimming referees and starters. And I know him through coaching. So, Jerry, you and I prepped a little bit, and you mentioned you prepare, although the tech side, I take responsibility for screwing up. Tell us a little bit about Jerry and where you are now, then we'll talk about your thoughts on what comes next.
Well, my name is Jerry Frentzos. I'm actually from Cincinnati, Ohio, and I swam with a relatively well-known swim team growing up, produced many Olympians. Unfortunately, I got third at Olympic trials, missed the Olympic team by 1/18 of a second. But that did not deter me from I never fell out of love with my sport. So even though I got third and that hurt a little bit.
Tell you what, let's just pause on that one because there won't necessarily be many people watching who actually get what that means. I've heard it said that the U.S. Olympic swimming trials are the single toughest competitive event in any sport. What makes it so tough and what does it mean to have third place? Like, for example, where were you world ranked at the time?
Well, I was ranked as high as third in the world at one point in 1988. And my projection for what the time I did at the trials would have gotten fifth at the games. So, I mean, it wasn't that far off of bronze medal. So it was a little tricky to disappointing to watch the Olympics and to watch somebody, basically what I felt was swim in my spot. Yeah. and compete for the third for a bronze medal. So, it's a fast meet. It's a very fast meet. So it was interesting.
So sorry to take you back to the trauma of the moment, but that's what you just said, projected to come fifth. Now, only maximum two people can compete in a swimming event from any country in the world.
Yes.
The Americans, particularly back when you were swimming, was so far ahead of the other countries that quite often the third ranked person would be in real shouting distance of getting a silver or bronze medal. And to lose that opportunity because only two Americans can swim is what makes it probably the toughest sporting event, competitive sporting event in the world. So that was your starting point on probably having been swimming for many years at that point, I would imagine.
Yeah, so that was my starting point. I actually started when I was 5 years old. So technically, this is my 50th year of swimming. So in a way, when you say what comes next, it's more swimming. It's more swimming. It's more exercise. It's more taking care of myself. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting to kind of ponder the title of your show. And it's not really what comes next. It's just really what continues. So, I mean, I would love to just keep, like I said, I've set 20 world records, six different age groups. Over the span of four decades and three continents. So it's funny, as somebody asked me recently, why do you do what you do? I didn't even pause. I just said, I'm really not training for world records. I'm training for old age. Old age is coming. We like it or not, it's tomorrow. It's the next week. It's a month away. It's a year away. So that's what I'm really training for, is I'm training for old age. I don't want to fall down and hurt myself. I want to make sure I do yoga probably more than I swim. I do yoga 4 days a week. So I want to make sure my balance is spot on as I continue to get older. my training is just me staying young and preparing for old age. And basically the world records just seem to be a bonus. So yes, there is a lot of prep for setting a world record. There's a lot of, I have to do things correctly. I basically call it, I like to live intentionally well. I like to live intentionally well all the time. So what's next for me is just to continue living intentionally well. Because it's, I have this photo on my website that has me as a 1987 as a kid, and I have another photo at 2020 when I'm at this current age, and then I have another photo that has three question marks that and for 2053, which is kind of keeps spacing the years out, is I would love to set a world record in 2053. I would love to set a world record in 2058 and just keep doing that every 5 years. Because that's just, it's my way of knowing what's coming and how to prepare for it. Now, I don't swim all the time, every year, year in and year out. I do take a little time off. But I focus on, when I take the time off from swimming, I focus on muscle strength. So I will actually put on maybe about 5 to 7 pounds of muscle. I have my little mantra that I carry with me is I feel strong when I feel strong. And that means physically and mentally. So my exercise allows me to feel strong. And when I'm not swimming, I will go into the weight room and I'll lift weights, somewhat heavy. And then when swimming comes back around every couple years, I lose the muscle weight and I just develop, I put on as much, I call speed muscle as possible. And I start swimming, maybe 2 years out from my next age group. So that way so this year for 2020 is supposed to be a big year for me. I was preparing myself to try to set 10 world records. I was supposed to go to Medellin, Colombia, Canadian Nationals, U.S. Nationals. I did go to Australia. I went down there and set a world record February 22nd in the 200 IM long course. The interesting thing about that swim meet is my brother got second behind me. So when we went to get the awards, the lady kind of chuckled and was like, oh, look, it took a world record to beat you. So then on February 29th, I came back home and swam in another swim meet in D.C., and it was short course meters, and my other brother was here. And so I set another world record, and my other brother got second. So I pretty much have talented brothers, and it takes a world record to beat them. So it's just kind of a fun extra story with my swimming.
So remind me, you've been swimming 50 years. So how old are you now, Jerry?
So I'm in the 55 age group. So I started when I was 5 years old.
Okay. So we're almost exactly the same age, and clearly you're in much better shape than me, as I will now demonstrate. So hopefully people are able to see this photo of you. And you've got in there 1987. So early 20s, classic age for most swimming events. 2020, yeah, you don't look much different, you son of a bitch. So 2053, why 2053?
That's just another third. So from 87 to 2020 is 33 years. So 20 to 53 is another 23 years. So it just kind of keep that pattern going. I made this photo the other day and I just put the three question marks and I'm curious to see what I look like, and how I perform, 33 years from now. So yeah. I think it's, for me, that's what's next is the three question marks and, in 2053, that comes next.
So based upon, I'll just stop sharing the picture. So based upon what you were saying, so you'll be roughly 88 then. And it's not what comes next. It's continuing and you'll still be swimming.
I'll still be swimming.
And you'll still be focusing on you feel strong when you feel strong.
Yes.
And what I pick up from you is that all feels entirely normal.
Absolutely.
That's your reality.
That's my reality. I set world records, but I don't want to say they're easy for me, but they're enjoyable. I mean, I know there's a lot of people out there that are like, oh, I don't want my sport to define me. I love my sport. I want my sport to define me. It is going to carry me, quite a long ways, and hopefully it'll carry me very easily to 2053 and beyond that. So yeah, I love my sport, and I hope that other people, as they, get older, they find an activity, they find something that they love. So, and I think it's that love that makes it so easy for me. To get in and do a workout, I know what I'm working towards. I have a decent sized carrot, and I simply, it's easy. I know that my hydration is important, and the hydration is easy. I know my nutritional intake is important, and my nutritional intake is easy. Yeah. I know certain things I'd like to consider what creates a biological advantage and what creates a biological disadvantage. Mm-hmm. So as I make decisions, that's really my driving force, is what are my biological advantages?
That's I really like learning from people about the sort of, you know, I'm a coach by, I guess, profession. And the book that invented the game of coaching around the mind was The Inner Game of Tennis in the 70s. So, I've had two relatively elite, swimmers as my sons. I'm very familiar with it. And I've got other people from swimming coming on as guests, coming soon. And one of those is my friend Coach Ian Armiger, who built Love for Swimming over the years, and pretty much every coach in world swimming knows Ian. His James Gibson, who coached the ISL winning team in December, is a mentee of Ian's, and Ian was on his coaching team. But it's been 30 years since Ian coached technique. he coaches the inches between here and here. So what fascinates, and I'm much the same with my clients, and what fascinates me with what you're saying is the idea around the love. And what immediately comes to mind is a US Olympian swimmer, who was able to make the top two and also smashed his sport, which was breaststroke, a few years behind you, was a guy who then moved to the Cayman Islands. That's where I got to know him, called Mike Barron. So swimming Hall of Famer, you'll be familiar. He reinvented this breaststroke for about 10 years. His world record stood for 10 years. He got out of the pool. He didn't gold medal in 88. He did gold medal in 92, and he got out of the pool and never got back in the pool for a decade. He was done.
Yeah.
He was cooked. He did not love the sport anymore. And I find that when my son started to swim, he'd been living in Cayman a long time. And if you went down to the 125-meter pool that existed on the island at the time, the guy who was leading the master's program without getting in the water was, unbeknownst to most of them, the reigning world record holder, you know, past Olympic gold medalist and swimming Hall of Famer, Mike Barron. Soft-spoken guy, not interested in swimming.
Yeah.
It's like, so I think that links to, there's a Japanese term called ikigai, which is often represented by four overlapping circles, but fundamental of, you know, what are you good at? What can you get paid for? What does the world need? But it's also the fourth one is what you just talked about, is what do you love? So that's a fascinating driver, is you wouldn't be doing this. You wouldn't still be swimming. You wouldn't be happy for the sport to some level define who you are, including, as I would be aware, but unless people in very involved swimming wouldn't be aware of, the club affiliation you have there is quite some club as well, right? So it's all part of your identity. And also part of it is, you know, you have a piece of artwork on the wall, and you two were telling me before that's one of your kids did that. It's awesome. It's a really nice piece of artwork. So I'm just fascinated by this piece around what do you love. And in talking to other people, I'm sure you're a very inspirational guy and your story's inspirational. So what tips and ideas have you shared with people that how they, you know, what they could be looking at to live intentionally well, aside from the technical? You know?
Yeah. So I guess what I focus on the most when I don't want to call them clients. It's just kind of like what you've said is that I provide a little bit of inspiration to others. I love when people lead others by being the example. So that's part of what I love. And it's funny is when I coach a swim team, and I coach every Tuesday and I go down to DC. And one time I was just simply, I noticed a lifeguard, every Tuesday I would see him and he was our main lifeguard. And then for about, 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, 9 months, I noticed that he looked 5 pounds heavier, then 10 pounds heavier, then 20 pounds heavier, and then 30 pounds heavier. So I finally approached him. I was just like, okay, that's incredible. You've lost a great amount of weight, haven't you? He goes, I have. And I was like, wow, how'd you do it? And he just simply looked at me and very quietly, he just said, watching you. And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, I watch you come in every Tuesday and you swim for an hour and a half by yourself. And then you go over and you do your push-ups and pull-ups and sit-ups by yourself. And then their team comes in and you still have all this energy to coach your team. So I just was trying to imitate you. And that's what I love the most is that type of story is that where you can just go about your day in such a way that you quietly inspire and lead others just by your actions, just by showing up and by doing what you should be doing every day. Mm. People see it. And people notice it. And so I love that story because he just looked at me and he goes, just by watching you. So I love when I see other people take that on, not to do it for any other reason, but for the love for themselves. Hmm. People see it, people notice it, and you do make changes. So I think by just myself living intentionally well, people notice. It's not like I seek the attention. I just do what I do. And just like you'd said earlier, it's like setting world records feels normal to me. And they do. They're not always easy. I don't always set world records. But it's the dedication I have to myself. I try not to drink too much alcohol. Mm-hmm. I know that creates a biological disadvantage and it's going to move me away from any type of world records. I make sure that I go to bed at a certain time every night. I make sure I get up at a certain time every morning. I easily, comfortably, regularly sleep 8 hours a day, 8 hours a night, and I sleep through the night. I rarely wake up. I'm just making sure that there's a couple things that I do correctly starting at lunch that gets me through the day that really prepares me for sleep. But my sleep has been spot on for an easy 30 years, 35 years.
for people not men in their 50s, listening, for them to understand that for lots of different reasons, as you age, sleeping through the night for 8 hours is statistically very anomalous. But the word intentionally well is, yeah, I mean, I, as an ex-athlete, nothing like your level, but as an ex-athlete myself, when I'm working with leaders, very often what we're looking at is how are they showing up? And this, the idea of leading by example is often if you're showing up to lead these days a Zoom town hall for people, right? How prepared are you? How rested are you, right? Did you get a good night's sleep last night? Did you set yourself up for sleep? Do you get good exercise? And it's fascinating how, I mean, you and I both know swimming quite well, me vicariously through the swimming community, not as a competitive swimmer, but it's this idea of pacing. You talk about your age group, it might be every 2 years, every 4 years. Olympic cycles, and in most swimmers, you know, I'm giving some stuff for people not involved in swimming. Most swimmers only try to swim fast at most 3 or 4 times a year, right? And so it's these cycles. And yet if you ask people on a percentage from 0 to 100, how flat out are you working every day? They will say 100%. And then they'll say, so what happens to you when you then take, a 1 week holiday? Oh, I go somewhere warm and I lie on the beach. And so what percentage effort are you putting out during that week? 0%. And then what happens when you go back to work? Oh, 120%, and then back to 100%. And they say, so the question I often ask them is, so when it gets to the Christmas holidays, do you ever get ill the day after you stop for the Christmas break? How did you know? That happens every year. And I'm going, well, let me explain to you how swimmers and many elite athletes who create training cycles will actually build. And if you took a light, they'll be building up, and you know all this way better than I do, and then taking a rest. And rest is part of the program, and sleep is part of the program, and nutrition is part of the program. But if you were to take a trend line, if you take a trend line across the people who go 100-0, the trend line is entropic. They drop downwards. Their performance starts to go. They have burnout. Right, you take a competitive athlete's trend line, okay, you then have another one allowing for age-related performance, but the trend line is upwards because it's the improvement comes because of the cycles. So I'm getting into a bit of detail there, but it's just a huge reminder for me that it's something, and I'm sharing it because people will watch they'll listen to the podcast, they'll watch this after the airing, and it's incredibly powerful. And I think the thing I would touch on now is, the real power in what you're saying to me is it's not what comes next, it's what continues. Right? Statistically, most people in their mind, the paradigms we live in, because we've always, 6 most dangerous words in business to me are we've always done it this way, right? Is they expect, okay, I'll work till I'm 65, I'll retire, my life expectancy is 70, so maybe I'll see the grandkids, I might, you know, do whatever else. But how much money do I need till then? You know, for many reasons, and my friend Chip Connolly was on the show, and he runs the Modern Elder Academy in Baja, right? And he's 60 this year. And it's like, well, what if you live a healthy, active life till you're 90? We need to rethink so many paradigms, including the world of work, because your pension, your social security isn't going to cut it if you're living an active life into your 90s. But what if you do? What if you turn around and you say, you know, turn around if you're married, or we have a partner, and you turn around to your partner and say, well, actually, honey, I'm going to be with you for the next 50 years. And they go, oh, shit, I have to put up with you that long? You're a shining example of leading by example, living intentionally well. And it's an absolute privilege to hear you give firsthand stories around it. And the one of a lifeguard is beautifully simple. So, sorry, I'm talking more than I normally would because you've really inspired me around this. So,
okay.
What else?
Well, what's funny is that I was listening to you and you're talking about like the 100%, the 0%, and the going up and the going down. And I think how I look at life is I know when my swim meets are. I know when I'm building up to them. I know when my I don't want to say grinded out type of a workout, and then I know when my speed workout is, then I know when my taper is, and I know when my fast swimming is. What I try to do is for me there really is no mental up and down. It's just I just plan it out, and I know what's coming next. So when I set up my year, when I set up my 2 years. But the other parts to it is I'm also paying attention to what's happening to me every day. So when I go in to swim, unfortunately, when I go into swim practice, I sometimes will try to swim with a team. But as soon as I show up, everybody looks at me and they get out of lane 8. And so there I am all by myself in lane 8 and I'm swimming by myself again. So a lot of times I just swim. I do all my training basically by myself. And so what I do is I go in and then I have 2 types of workouts. I have a physical workout and I have a mental workout. Mm. So if I get to the pool and I feel physically strong, then I know it's going to be a physical workout. And it might run for about 90 minutes with very specific types of sets and things like that. But when I go to the pool and I'm not feeling strong and I feel tired, fatigued, worn out, I have what I call a mental workout. So I'll throw away the physical workout knowing that my body's telling me that, no, today is not your physical workout. That workout is a mental workout. Then I swim slow. I work on my technique. I work on my turns. I work on just the little things to try to capture, because every workout I need to try to capture an extra 1/100th of a second somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I'm not feeling physically strong. I don't throw that day away. I just simply say, okay, it's a shift to the mental workout. And I try to do that with my days as well. So if I feel a little fatigued, I don't sit there and think, oh, this day is going to be a waste. So what can I work on for this day that I'm, okay, I feel a little run down, I feel tired. So what can I work on to help sharpen my mental side of my life? And then other times I feel strong, and I feel strong physically or mentally. So I take it and I break it down to two workouts, and then sometimes I break it down to 2 days. Now, and if I feel that this day just feels mentally not with it, physically not with it, then I just recognize that I have my third option. The third option is today is a rest day. Mm-hmm. So I just simply shut it down both physically and mentally, and make sure that I just increase my amount of rest. It's either a physical or mental rest day.
I've never heard anybody put it like that before, and what that links to me, that's amazing. That's absolutely stunning. And the linkage for me is to judgment and self-judgment, which then you really get behavioral about this. And a tiny story is, I have a riding buddy who's 2 or 3 inches shorter than me, very, very light for cycling, right? And I'm 210 pounds. I'm way heavier than I should be at 6'3", right, by my standards. And he's fully 60 pounds lighter than me at 5'10". Right. And we went on, I'm normally fine, but clearly on the hills, he just disappears into the distance uphill. On downhill, I go past him, even if I break. And we took a random routing the other day, and we hit a hill, and the gradient on the hill, on the sign that shows the gradient, I've never seen anything like it in my life. 25%.
Ooh.
And as we were approaching that, I just went, my friend, today is not the day. It's like, and part of me, I
think most people would say that.
And we planned to have a long, hard ride for about 4 hours. And we had coffee to begin with before we started. I went, I'm really not feeling it. And he goes, no, neither am I. So we'll just do an easier ride. And the thing is, we've ridden together for years, and we're really understanding of where we are. And the other one is, I do Pilates every week, because as we know, when you hit about your mid-40s upwards as a man, you have to work on your muscle tone more than your aerobics. I've been doing that for years, and sometimes I can never tell, much like you jumping in the pool. I go there and I have a personal trainer, and she'll just know within the first 5 minutes, as will I, whether it's strength, whether I feel physically strong, or whether it's going to be about technique. So the exact same thing. But I've never heard a swimmer talk about that self-guided, self-motivated, self-led training in such a fashion. And I think there's fantastic parallels there for people to look at. So that's just really, that's just stunning, Jerry. I just love it. So.
And to me, that's the equation of living intentionally well. Is just that my body is talking to me. It's always talking to me. It's always talking to you. Our bodies are always sending messages. After 55 years, I know what my body's telling me. My body's going to tell me one day I need more protein than the next. It's going to tell me I need more carbohydrates than the next. My body will tell me that, okay, you're a little bit low on your fiber intake. You need to boost that up a bit. So I think that's just part of living intentionally well, is just your body is constantly sending messages, and I'm listening and I'm paying attention and I'm actually responding to the messages.
So last thing to ask you, because, and this is selfish, because it's in my mind. So you're listening to your body, right? But when you're doing the mental workout, it ain't just a technique, right? So one of the things I've noticed of myself and others right now, today is very much a back to school vibe in the UK. They had their equivalent of Labor Day was a holiday yesterday. Right. So it's next week in the States, right? I think,
yes.
If I remember right. So then there's always a back to school, back to work, back to whatever vibe. But sitting behind it all in most parts of the Northern Hemisphere where it's back to school is what happens next with the pandemic. Right. And I realized that part of why I felt tired on Sunday, I felt fine. I mean, I've been feeling strong. I've been riding well this summer, was probably some level of unconscious at that point, which I'm bringing consciousness to. Almost existential exhaustion of like, we've been at this for 6 months, and actually life is to some degree normal now where I live. And for my own personal life, apart from lack of ability to travel. But it's like, what's going to happen in the next few months?
Yeah.
So I wonder to what level, you know, when you say there's a physical workout and a mental workout. For me, the other piece is what's the energetic tuning in? So, so I've just been tuning into that since Sunday morning of like, why was I tired on the ride? Mm-hmm. I'm going, I'm not feeling ill. I'm rested. I'm, my nutrition's good. My fitness is good for my standards. And I kind of let it sit, that question sit there. This is what's happening now. Right. So just wondering how are you, are you able to tune in with the, how focused you have been for so many years on your body and the mental side of the technique, et cetera. How about that more sort of energetic spiritual side? What can you use to tune into that?
Yes, I do miss the competition. I do miss the swim meets and the travels and the things like that. But what I actually did for myself and what I did for my teammates is that I live right across the street from the water, a creek that goes out to a river that goes out to Chesapeake Bay, is that I realized back in May that I'm going to be in trouble if I don't fix what is going on in my world at that moment. It's not going to be pretty for me because I know that if I do not exercise, that is critical for me. Mm-hmm. So I just simply reached out to some teammates and I said, I'm going to be swimming, open water swimming. Does anyone want to join me? The people that just showed up, and we've been very responsible, 6 feet apart,
yeah.
No real conversations, no hugging, handshakes, anything like that. So everybody's been very safe. And then where we swim, we easily can spread out more than 6 feet. But now I swim 4 days a week, for about 70 to 90 minutes, and I swim with a group. So that is, I know that it was going to be a disaster for me and I had to make an adjustment quickly. So again, it's that I know myself, and if I didn't save myself at that moment, it would have been really, it would have been more difficult later. So we've been swimming. I think tonight might be our 71st swim since the beginning of May, and it has saved me, and it has saved a lot of my teammates, and it has saved a lot of my friends. So I just simply knew that I needed to do something, and I wasn't going to let the pandemic, and I wasn't going to let 2020. To be honest with you, and it's going to sound really strange, is 2020 is one of my greatest years. 2020 for me will go down. It's one of my greatest years. I got to travel with my brothers. I set 2 more world records to finally get to number 20 that I've been shooting for decades. I spent 2.5 years writing a book. I finally finished that. I got it into print. I published it. That book's now getting me speaking engagements. Yes, they're on the computer, but I don't want this pandemic to define my 2020. I want me to define my 2020, well, and I'm doing it.
I'm conscious we've run over time. I allowed it for a bit because I screwed up for a couple of minutes. I could listen to you. I could, tell a story myself and then provoke another brilliant story from you for hours. But we better wrap up. It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm going to try to wrap up without screwing it up. But before we do that, can you just let us know where we can find you online, Jerry?
So my website is liveintentionallywell.com.
That's the pretty cool and easy to remember one. So let me see if I can get this going without messing it up too much. But yes, we'll be wrapping up in a minute. Okay, so I thank you so much. It's been, as I said, inspiring. And your particular tip around the 2 different workouts was something I've never heard before. And I honestly wish I knew that to share it with swim coaches at times when my kids were struggling with a balance between 12, 13 practices a week and academics and life. So absolutely remarkable. So thank you very much, Sherry.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. This has been great.
Cool. Thanks.
All right.